Welcome back, everybody, to the Bro, the Biconics Review of Honor here on the Biconics Wrestling Podcast channel. We are so excited to be here with you to go over this week's ROH from Honor Club, episode 60. Gentlemen, we watched a good one there. Before we get into it, though, do a little housekeeping as per usual. We have Mikey here. We've got Jesse. We've got Andrew. We've got myself, JBL. We're going to go through Ring of Honor, match by match, give you our opinions. They are opinions. And then we will let you know what we thought of the show overall at the end. If you've just joined us this time from some weird Lovecraftian algorithm that dragged you kicking and screaming into the light, welcome. We have cookies. If you're here all the time, we love you very much as a fan. Thank you for joining us again, and we'll put our hands in soon to make sure we get that code of honor going. You can always subscribe to the channel at BZ WrestlePod. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and the alert bell so you're always getting every day's different type of content. We have something every day, pretty much. You can also follow us on social media at BC WrestlePod. Drop a comment down here. Drop a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And we have a Patreon as well, which we can do our live watch-alongs and some other fun stuff that we're plotting and planning, especially when we're down in May on the 18th and 19th of May in Middletown Township, New Jersey. We will be at the New Jersey Wrestling Show. That is going to be a lot of fun there. We'll be there for the after party on Saturday as well. So please come out and see your BC WrestlePod boys. Give us a hug, buy some merch, say hello. We'd love to get to know you and get to know you better. I think that's all I need, Mikey Ray. That's all we've got to put out there.
Yeah, immediately. Also, don't forget, if you can't watch our beautiful faces, we do have audio podcast versions as well of every single review, which is very, very important because I have a couple people who listen to us but can't commit to watching videos, but the audio podcast is still how they get their fix.
Perfect. I didn't know that was there. I'll add that to my list for next time for the 12 minutes of housekeeping. Yes, Jess.
I would also like to clarify, because you welcomed all the new people in and told them we had cookies. We have cookies for the regular fans as well, too. We give cookies to everyone.
We are sponsored by North Pole Cookies out of Vermont. They are one of the best cookie makers in the country. Please support them if you want them. If you're in the area, we will get them to you somehow. I don't know about shipping. I'll talk to you later, Jesse. However, hands in, gentlemen. We are now joining up for Ring of Honor, episode 60. We start off with a promo from Collision. Because, as we all know, on Ring of Honor, we need to have a promo on Collision. But, it was our Ring of Honor champion. And he was talking about stuff with the upcoming pay-per-view, but also that he was back and doing that stuff. He is the ROH champion. ROH champion. I forgot about that. Mark Briscoe, just kind of going over what he's going to be doing in Dynasty, and also how much he's like kind of, you know, a very violent man, which he will show tonight against his opponent as well. Pretty standard boilerplate. I don't know why we're showing AEW promos on ROH, but
I'll be at that pay-per-view.
Yeah, pretty much. Except, you know, what are you selling it to? You complain that ROH is not getting all your enough viewers. Who are you selling it to? Well, we move on from that. We get out of that first promo. This is kind of just, it was like a weird palate cleanser to get you started here, because we're jumping into Aaron Solo versus Brian Keith, Mikey's match of the night. And we really enjoyed that there was a vigorous code of honor to start it off, which got pulled into a slap. This is the best that Brian Keith has looked in the last couple of months. Aaron Solo is the jobber to the stars we thought he was. Gentlemen, did you enjoy this match? Was this something you wanted to see first?
I still don't know, because it's like, I don't even know why we had this. But watching it first 3 minutes, my first note I wrote down was, I really hope they sign Aaron Solo, if they haven't already.
He's been signed for a while.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm just going to stop talking here and have a good night, everybody.
No. Good night, everybody.
The flipping centaur or stunner at the end was really awkward. Okay, talking about myself here. Right, I'm going to go to bed. Good night, everyone.
No, when you have Athena doing it better off the top rope, it's not like there's no reason to have it. I mean, Andrew, Mikey, pipe in, please. Talk about this. It doesn't mean Jesse.
I'll jump in before Mikey, because you know, I know how
Mark Mikey's going to yell at us. So. Keith.
My only note for this was, it was a decent enough match. It was solid wrestling, but it didn't do anything for me going into the, you know, night of matches, and it didn't do anything for me coming out of it. So,
did it excite you as the first match of the night, or did it feel like it should be put somewhere else?
No, because this, I think it would have been better, and I think it played into my feeling of the card overall. But this would have been better as like a filler match. So there's, you know, storyline matches that are gonna, you know, take place or exciting things like that. And then you put some of these in so people can get work and you can see them wrestle. Mm-hmm. But it really doesn't tie into anything. And it being the first match, it didn't get me like super hyped, like, all right, tonight's gonna be a crazy night of matches, or have me going, oh, I can't wait to see where this story is going, because there was no story.
There we go. I see Mikey nodding in agreement here and kind of going for it. Are you on that, Mikey?
I have the same note as Andrew. I thought this was a decent match. I am unapologetically a fan of the Bounty Hunter, Brian Keith, but I am also, unlike some other people on this channel, I am very wary to my biases, and I try to be very fair because I like Brian Keith, but he has not been booked well at all in either ROH or AEW. The best match that he has had so far in this whole entire stint was when he faced Eddie Kingston, and that was months ago, before he got signed to AEW.
So are you saying he's getting the Matt Hardy treatment right now that Matt Hardy was getting for the last couple of years?
Well, the difference is at least Brian Keith is on television.
That's true. That's true.
Are you saying that there are some people on this channel who aren't aware of their bias? Because I'll say it, and I'll say it loud and proud, and I will stand by it. Justice for Robin Renegade.
I love it.
You know what? I can stand that. I can stay right there and stand with you, Jesse. That is definitely somewhere we need to push more. Because, again, tonight also, weirdly, was very light on women's action.
Mm-hmm. Where the Renegades like me in high school, back. Very light.
On women's action. However, also light on women's action, but not light on action at all, was our next match as a 3-on-3 match with Lance Archer back with the Righteous instead of with Monster Sauce, taking on Savion Truitt, Damian Chambers, and channel favorite John Cruz. Gentlemen, this, when it was set up, I actually didn't know. I had forgotten the Righteous were with Lance Archer for this.
Are
one.
They?
I kept getting confused with, I know. I never know what team he's part of. I enjoyed what was going on. There was some stutter stopping, but I have to say this up the top. John Cruz getting a bigger pop than the Righteous was hysterical. And I love that he is recognized as who he is, whether we want to say his name, Serpentico. And it's very fun to see him in a match.
Well, John Cruz.
What did you all feel as you're watching
John
this?
John Cruz gets a bigger pop than Serpentico does.
It's true.
Like, his alter ego is more popular. I mean, it was a squash match. It was, I wouldn't even call it an enhancement. They all had good showings for like the minute 15 seconds that each particular wrestler had. I like it because it was the Righteous, but it wasn't like, you know, anything to write home about. I think the best part of it was when they were going to lock up in the very beginning of the match and Lance Archer was, no, it was Vincent who started, but Lance Archer was in the match and John Cruz just dives out of the ring like, nope, I don't want that.
I also love when he tried to reach across the ring and he timed it just right to be late to hit Vincent on the back of the head. Like he was trying to like smack him. But John Cruz was like, no, I'm a pro. I'm not going to get him, but just like barely miss him.
This should have just been the Righteous, especially mm-hmm. with Lance Archer entering separate from them. Like they are even wearing similar gear. So it's like, why are they not part of the same group? It's like they're not fully committing to this thing, and I have no problem with them not fully committing. I'd rather them fully commit to him not being a part of anything to do with the Righteous.
He doesn't need to be there.
No, Lance Archer serves less purpose for the Righteous than Jack Jameson serves to the Iron Savages. And I'll be honest, tonight heavily served less purpose because at least Jack Jameson played into what happens later. I have no desire to see him out there with the Righteous because I'm enjoying what the Righteous are doing. And I feel like at best, him being out there takes away time from there to be the focus. And it did nothing for me.
Can I parlay on that just a bit?
Why not?
So when I see Lance Archer out there with the Righteous, my first thought is bat nipples. Now stop. Hold on. We're going to get there. Okay. This is not something you need to censor. We're getting there. So if we remember the wonderful film, yes. I believe it was it Batman Forever? That was George Clooney, or was that Batman and Robin?
Batman and Robin.
Right. So the bat suit had nipples on the outside. For what purpose? It wasn't adding extra armor. So they were useless. They were useless bat nipples. Lance Archer. Doesn't need to be there, adds no value, and not even aesthetically pleasing.
I 100% agree.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all on these ones.
Let's be honest, this is more a 3-on-2 than a 3-on-3 because I forgot that John Cruz was there this entire match outside of the beginning and the, you know, I was like, how dare you, John Cruz? You just fed these two to the Righteous and Lance Archer. Let's just call it what it is, which I found very hilarious. As far as in-ring goes, I thought this was okay. I'm a sucker, though, for, like, weird comedy spots. I did like the Lance Archer with the height thing. It was kind of funny. And then just the chops to the chest. It's like, oh, okay, hit me. Hit me. All right, let me show you what real pain is. Bam.
Yeah, the hockey fight one with the shirt over the head in the corner, Jesse, you're right. That was hysterical.
But as far as, you know, kind of talking about what Andrew said about the previous match, I feel that while I love the Righteous and I love them and I love their whole gimmick, I love their character development, I'm trying to figure out why we have yet to put them in some sort of story. Because at this time last year at Supercard of Honor 2023, we literally, even though it was a weird storyline, we had them and Stu Grayson taking on Dark Order in that weird storyline of will they, won't they? Is Stu Grayson finally out of, you know, Dark Order and all that? Trust me, we had three different versions of a Cajun accent in that whole entire shtick. But now they're kind of just there, which makes me sad. I'm like, can we do more with them? That's all I want. And I think that's my biggest frustration with Ring of Honor right now is there's a lot of good talent, but I feel that either the story writers have been put on vacation or they got lost in, I don't know, someone lost them in luggage because we're missing the storylines. And that's just in general note for the whole multiverse of madness that is the programming ROH and the other parent company as well.
Talking about losing the plot, though, I mean, we had all that happen with those three, you know, at least the Righteous one. We then get JD Drake versus Lee Johnson coming up. And while and I know I've talked a lot of crap about Lee Johnson on this entire. No, first off, we had the Tony Nese promo. Again, we talked about this last week. I skipped these promos because I don't care about it. It did set up something later in the night, though. Yes, we had Mark Sterling in a long promo talking about Tony Nese and showing off his nipples. More nipples. It's wonderful.
The nipple show.
Do we need to discuss anything on this promo? Because it comes up later in the evening. I mean, honestly, at that point.
The video package was good. The promo after, didn't need it.
It's a mouthpiece talking about his client. Woohoo. He's going to do Daivari next week, and then we'll be done with the entire thing.
Did it add anything? No, but we have to do our due diligence and cover everything that's on the show. Listen here, Jonathan. If we have to talk about Chris Jericho on another promotion, we have to talk about this, and this is nowhere near as bad.
This was entertaining compared to that, but that doesn't matter. Because we jump from Tony Nese's abs and his nipples and everything else to JD Drake versus Lee Johnson. I have talked a lot of crap about Lee Johnson. We all have talked crap about Lee Johnson lately. He held his own in this match. And he made JD Drake look more agile than usual. And he looks agile usually.
I was surprised
about that. I was very surprised about that. I will say, when the commentary is saying he's doing the high fly flow, where is Tanahashi? He needs to come and like kick his ass because no one does the high fly flow. That is Tanahashi's, and it's a frog splash, not a crossbody. Come on, Riccaboni and Caprice, you're better than this.
It was interesting to see JD Drake in his new old gear.
Yep.
Which I didn't really like. It just kind of felt like, oh, Anthony Henry's gone, so now it gave me the implication that he's going to get knocked down back to being basically a jobber. Like, he's going to start just, like, losing to people, which is a real shame because, and it's a shame what happened with Anthony Henry, too, because I feel like the Workhorsemen were top team in Ring of Honor, a tag team.
Yeah.
I will say with this match, I feel like Lee Johnson looks his best when he's getting beat up. And by that, I mean, like, when he faces someone he has to fight back from, like, adversity against, the best matches that I've seen from him have been his match against Nick Comoroto going into his title match against Kyle Fletcher, his match against Kyle Fletcher, and now this one. They've been the strongest he's looked recently. And I think it's because we're seeing him come. He has to have some adversity, which gives him some character semblance. You know, there's this idea of like, okay, we're watching this like young athletic guy fight against like adversity. Because in the beginning of this match, before they actually started, I was like, Lee Johnson makes me think of the complaint that everyone, like people have about Superman. That Superman is just boring because he's this like Boy Scout character and, you know, all this stuff. And, but really when you get into Superman, he's like, there's so much more to it because it's not about him being so powerful. It's about the struggles that he deals with because of that. But Lee Johnson doesn't have those interesting things going on. We're not seeing the same things that actually make Superman interesting. So I think him being beaten up and struggling against people who challenge him and finding ways to come out on top gives it some interest. But I don't know how long we can do that of him fighting people who are just going to beat him down for him to come back and beat them. Because either at some point you feel like realistically that's not going to be able to continue to happen, or he should get better and develop somewhat. But yeah, this was actually a surprisingly enjoyable match for me between the two of them. And Jesse, I love Superman. I think Superman stories are great. Like,
I love Superman. Was not, it's one of my absolute favorites. Mikey, you want to go or do you want me to go?
You can go ahead, Jesse.
John, you look like you wanted to add something before I jump in.
I had a question beforehand, and this is just, I mean, it's a serious question about this match before we jump into your review of it. Did it look like JD Drake had stolen his towel from the La Quinta in Montreal, or did it look like he actually brought that himself from home?
La Quinta.
Because it was bigger than it should have been, and a little floppier, but it was also puffy, as if someone had done it in hotel laundry. I'm just saying.
Very serious question.
Very. Sorry.
No, you're good. It didn't derail anything. It's just, how do I go about this? Just, go away. Give me a week without him. That's all I'm asking. 1 week, please. Go away and take your weak ass corner chops with you. The match was too long. It's, you know that I'm completely out of it when I'm waiting for it to end. And I'm pressing the 10 second skip because I just want it to end.
Yikes. Yikes. Mikey, did you feel that way too, that you had to keep hitting the 10 second skip?
Mikey's match of the night.
Well, I mean, you kind of took the words out of my mouth. I think from an entertainment value, this was probably my match of the night. Not in-ring work-wise, because that's going to go to something else. But as far as entertainment value, I really enjoyed this match. See, again, I have said this on multiple occasions before, and I'm going to continue to say it because this is where I stand when I view professional wrestling, is that I do a lot of critiquing. But if I'm having a good time, if I'm smiling from ear to ear while I am watching a match, despite my personal feelings of lack of character development or lack of storyline that, you know, an individual might be going through, I thought this had everything that I like about small comedic wrestling, because just the physicality of JD Drake versus the athleticism of Lee Johnson, and Lee Johnson trying to do all the stuff and JD's like, nope. Heck no, like denying Lee at points in this match was kind of funny to watch. So while I still hold my critiques that I need Lee Johnson to, you know, get some charisma or a little bit more than what he has now, and I somewhat agree with Jesse, maybe take a week off so we don't have to see him on a consistent basis every single week, because look at another company of what happens when they try to jam a superstar down the throat and it took them years to get him to be back in the graces of the fans.
Are you saying that Lee Johnson has to get leukemia for us to like him?
No, I'm not saying that that's what needs to happen. However, if we are going to pull that example from another company, it's kind of a dick move to kind of hate someone who has leukemia and to constantly boo them, because then that says something about your own personal character.
I mean,
I'm not saying I wish that upon Lee Johnson, but I'm not saying that it kind of shows like who has a heart and who doesn't during that situation.
Value only lasts for so long, though.
That's very fair.
It's like you beat it. Okay, it's been a while now.
Can I ask for something from whomever's editing this tonight? Can we have a couple of out of context clips thrown up there for the shorts? Like bat nipples can be one, and then Andrew, who made a fantastic and very stellar and well thought out point, but out of context, him saying Lee Johnson looks better when he's getting beaten up is hilarious because it's like telling somebody, you know, you sound so much smarter when you're not talking.
That's hilarious. But all in all, to end my statement, move on to the next one. I was thoroughly entertained. I still have my critiques with Lee Johnson, but I'm also willing to give a little because I had a fun time watching this match. And despite how our personal feelings may be, we have to be careful not to be jaded. And I'm also the type of person where I have my critiques, but I don't want to constantly be bashing a wrestler because it's not fair to them. And it's also, it can kind of sink into your soul a little bit and discolor your view on wrestling as objectively if you could try to be. It would eat at my soul, I'm going to be honest. That's just me.
I will say I don't know if I would call this my match of the night, but I gave it about the same ranking as my other top matches. Mm-hmm. Of those matches that I ranked equal, I would probably rank some of the other ones as my match of the night. I don't know that I actually had a match of the night. But it's more because I was more entertained by the people involved in those. But yes, this was a better look of Lee Johnson than I've seen previously.
And I kind of want to put that down to he had a good dance partner to do it with because JD Drake can really carry most people to a very good match.
He's a strong, strong man.
I'm going to self-govern here based off of what Mikey had just said about Biased and Jaden. If we have a Lee Johnson match next week, I'm not going to review it. I'm at that point where he comes on my screen and go away.
Okay, you won't review that. I won't review Arya Daivari's video package from the premiere after.
I'm glad you added video in there because that'd be another great out of context clip.
And just like everything else here at BC WrestlePod, I will review everything.
Of course. So we talked about bias earlier in the night and like knowing where our biases were, what we're going to be. I just have to do this just for everything else. I have to say that, you know, the next match, while it was a squash, it may have been a favorite for some reason. I don't know why, but it was Abaddon taking on Allison Kay. I was excited. I knew Allison Kay from other stuff that she had been here for. So having her take on Abaddon was going to be a really fun thing, like power versus the kind of just like monster heel that Abaddon kind of is. Loved the code of honor into the bite. I'm enjoying that spot quite a bit. And then Capri saying that AK needs to get a tetanus shot after it, which is even funnier. It was a quick match. Did you all enjoy this a little bit or like see something? Because you saw Abaddon fly, which I've never seen before. So
I have one complaint about this match, and it goes from the previous one. They could have taken 5 minutes from the previous match and added it to this match. Other than that, I really enjoyed this match and had a good time with it.
I don't even think they necessarily need to take time from the previous match. I think there were many things that made this night more full than it had to be. And they could have given this match much more time because going into this, seeing, you know, what this match was, I was surprised we didn't get a longer match. I was surprised it was a squash. I was hoping it was going to be a full match. You know, we had no intro for Allison Kay.
Right.
You know, this was someone with a name that, you know, most people will recognize, especially if you're in, even in the ROH circle, but in a general wrestling, you know, knowledge. So it kind of bummed me out because not only did it feel like it took away from Allison Kay getting a chance to be on Ring of Honor and wrestle and be seen here, it also felt like it took away from Abaddon too, because either we should have seen a squash where Abaddon just destroyed Allison Kay and show how dangerous she can be, especially because the last time we saw her, I think, was when she wrestled Martinez.
Right.
Or this should have been a full match and shown us how good they both are and show us how good Abaddon is. But yeah, so that kind of bummed me out. But I mean, I enjoy when I get to see Abaddon on TV, so.
camera guy caught the smoke very well this time. I could see Abaddon when they came out.
I want to see a partnership. Abaddonhausen.
Abaddonhausen.
Yes. Now I want that as a team immediately. First and foremost, shout out to my girls of the Hex and both Allison Kay and Marty Bell, as who we would see later in the evening.
Yep.
TNA, that is still a baffling decision why we did not sign those two when you had the chance. But anyways, who knows what's going to happen, because we'll see what goes with this. As far as this match goes, look, I like Abaddon. They are fantastic. They are great. Not my favorite Abaddon match, and we're just going to leave it at that. And
okay.
No fault of the talent in the ring. It's just, I agree with Andrew. There are certain places where the card tonight felt a little bloated in certain areas. And we could have, you know, condensed them down a little bit. I still thought it was great, though. Abaddon's going to be fantastic.
I'm biased. I always love seeing Abaddon on my screen. So hopefully I can get more of that as we go along. But we transition backstage to Lexi Nair as she is talking to Taya Valkyrie about what's been going on with Johnny and after the whole Donaldson thing. And Johnny's rehabbing his abs, as you do, which is always a good thing to hear that he's taking care of his body. But, you know, this was kind of a fluff piece, like getting into certain things for the end of the night. And then you had your line of the night from a backstage promo where she tries to send Lexi away. And Lexi's like, this is my interview. And like takes her step forward and is like, no, this is my space. And so Taya has to go off in a huff. Good for you, Lexi Nair. Stand up to Taya every time.
I thought that line was good. I thought the line was good where she said, Johnny's in rehab. He's in rehab. No, he's rehabilitating his abs. What kind of people do you think we are? Aside from that, you know, it was a fluff piece, but I enjoyed that line.
Fluffy.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay. It wasn't my favorite one. I think part of it was, for me, it almost sounded like the sound was a little off for Taya. Like, it sounded like when she would talk to Lexi, and then she would talk over here, and that's the kind of sound quality that you got. So there were many times when I was like, oh, wait, what did she say? What did she say? Yeah, so it was a little weird for me in that regards. But,
can someone turn up the captions? I can't hear my show.
Yeah. And I did enjoy Taya's glasses. Those were pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
Taya's fashion is always on point. I actually thought this was an okay promo. I agree with my you guys here. It more so just set up what we were getting later in the evening in terms of the match itself. But I always love seeing Taya on my screen. Very talented, very underrated. And at least a company is utilizing her, so that's always a plus for me.
I mean, she's got her internet show to keep worrying about right now. With
God, Taya, those things are Taya. So good.
They're fluff and they're less than 10 minutes. I recommend if you want to see something funny, they're actually doing pretty well with that.
So good.
Speaking of fluff and a little bit funny, Iron Sav just took on the infantry next. And you know what? I'm not a big fan of Jack Jameson. I have admitted this in the past. But the man, I will give you credit. You knew the Montreal crowd was dead for some reason, and you called them out on it. You kept asking for them to cheer, getting them going, because this is going to be fun. So good on you doing that. These two teams have fought each other before. They've done stuff like this in the past where they've kind of rocked each other back and forth. Did we see anything new in this, or were we just happy to see them on our screens this week? I'm kind of wondering that from you all.
I'm going to take the second one for 200, Alex.
What the hell even was this match? The Iron Savages haven't been present for 6 weeks, and they come on and lose again. And then we get a whole bunch of schmas at the end because Premier Athletes come out and attack. And then we hear Dalton Castle's music, which I got very excited for. And then Brian Keith and Mark Briscoe make the save. What the hell are we doing? Why Premier Athletes? Where are the Outrunners? Weren't we doing a promo with the Outrunners? Like, what are we doing? Yeah. I was happy to see the Iron Savages. Yeah, but like... And the commentary team treating the Outrunners like they're the heels in it and very obnoxiously putting that through in their commentary, and it felt so forced. So clearly I love this. No, I was not a fan of this. I didn't know what we were doing. I didn't like this arc.
I think you meant Iron Savages and not the Outrunners, but that's right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm frustrated and upset. Yeah. So yeah, listen to what I mean, not what I say.
Yeah, I actually, seeing what they were trying to say with the Iron Savages, like, I actually, maybe it was because this match wasn't the smoothest tag match. It felt like there were some spots where things were kind of off, which is really weird because we have seen them wrestle together and we've seen them just wrestle in general and been really good tag teams. But I wouldn't hate an Iron Savages turn to heel because I think they could be a super dominant heel team as well. But that's neither here nor there at this point. They did bring up at one point in the beginning of the match that at this time last year is when we saw the tag team titles at All In, or it was at All In last year that we saw them change hands. And I feel like that was the beginning of the misuse and problems of the tag team titles in Ring of Honor. And I agree, the end of this got super convoluted. I think, yeah, it would have been nice for us to get something with the Outrunners since the Infantry were doing that, you know, kind of story with them before they got their title shots. I don't know if something's happening with them, but
they're at least just have it. They can't travel from the 80s.
Their flux capacitor broke. But you could have just had the Premier Athletes come out and beat down on the Infantry and then, you know, either just have that be the end of it. Like, it was interesting to see Dalton Castle come out at first because I was like, okay, where's this going to go? Because that's not who I would have pictured to come out to save them. But then everybody else coming out, like, it wasn't enough people that I was like, oh, the whole locker room standing up to the Premier Athletes. I also was like, why is the whole locker room standing up to the Premier Athletes? Like, it doesn't feel like that's...
No, if it's the whole locker room, where's Christopher Daniels? HR needs to be out there.
And Jerry Lynn, dang it.
Dang it!
Yeah, no, it felt super convoluted. It just was... It was too many people to serve a story or not enough people to make it believable.
Ugh. Always tough on that one. Mikey, I have to ask this before we get into your part of it. Is Dalton Castle doing Tony Storm's bit better than Tony Storm with the shower shoes?
Yes. Yes. And Mikey, I'm not trying to cut you off, but if the Iron Savages lose anymore, I'm going to start calling the Aluminum Domesticates because they're not Iron, they're not Savage. They just get beat every time and they're thin and weak.
All right. So to answer the multitude of questions that have, you know, gotten my way, number one, a resounding yes, Dalton Castle does the shower shoe bit a little bit better. Also, Dalton Castle must be part Hispanic because that was the Chonkla look he had in his eyes too, which was super fantastic. And if anybody who knows the Chonkla look, you better run and duck for cover because those things will boomerang. It doesn't matter where you hide, you're getting hit with it. Now, as far as this match goes, yes, I agree that we've seen a lot of this already between Infantry and Iron Savages going back and forth. We kind of got that for the majority of last year, if I'm going to be completely frank here. But again, I like Iron Savages. I like the Infantry. This wasn't the most profound thing, but I enjoyed it for what it was. Now, where my biggest critique of this whole thing, you know, comes from is the ending with the Premier Athletes coming out and beating up on the Infantry and whatnot. I'm less so irritated with the fact that they beat up on the Infantry, but my biggest issue was the sequence of events because we had a bunch of people that, you know, were on this episode, kind of, but also, like, they're defending the locker room against the Premier Athletes. And I'm raising an eyebrow to this whole situation because I'm like, I think you pulled the trigger on this a little too early because to me, when you have a whole entire locker room come out to save a tag team, that means to tell me that usually the storyline and the story trope that you use for all of this is the fact that the Premier Athletes have been running roughshod on the locker room for weeks and maybe sometimes a month or two. I feel that we skipped past that whole entire build up just to get them. Here's a new faction. Here we go. I'm like, no, Ring of Honor. Ooh, I was so irritated. I'm like, this is lazy writing. I get you want to get the Premier Athletes in front and you want them to be your big heel faction since, you know, we have another heel faction in another company who are holding our tag titles hostage because you got the Vanilla Gorilla running roughshod all over for them. But I was so baffled with the fact that whoever thought this was a good idea needs to be sat down, have a good talking to, and never let it happen again. Because this is just lazy writing to me. They're like, oh snap, we don't really have any too many heel factions. Throw them out there right now. Which also doesn't make sense, because despite how you feel about Arya Daivari being the odd man out in the Premier Athletes, if I'm going to be completely honest, you haven't gotten the third one to introduce what he does or getting that video package. We're telling everything out of order. It is really weird. It makes no freaking sense. And also, this also screams to me, hey, so we're going to throw these three out there. And instead of, you know, giving Josh or Tony maybe going after the Pure Championship, we're just going to let a certain AEW talent still hold on to that thing. I'm like, you have had people vacate titles for less in this company. Like, what's the tea on that? It's, my story writer brain for this whole thing really, really irritated me. And for me, this was the worst part of the whole entire night. I'm like, this is lazy writing. And whoever thought this was a good idea needs to be talked to immediately.
Also, we did this once, and this is how we used Dalton Castle for the whole night.
Right. Right.
Which also screams, we don't really have anything for Dalton at the moment, so let's just get him out there because he's popular with the fans. No! Give me a story. It's not that hard.
Well, and he can have great stories with any of the Premier Athletes. Like, any one of them could have a good time against him in different types of matches. So let's hope something else comes of that. Who knows what it'll be. We then transitioned to, honestly, again, there were so little women's matches on this card, and they stuck everybody in one match here, as we had Taya Valkyrie, Diamante, and Layla Gray taking on Kiera Hogan, Layla Hirsch, and Trisha Dora. And hey, look, Layla Gray's there to eat a pin. Wow. I don't know. What are you doing there, Jesse?
It was eight minutes. Bell to bell. It was 8 minutes.
Yeah.
That's not even 2 minutes per person.
Six women in the thing. Six women in the match.
And 8 minutes. And as soon as I saw them coming out, I was like, yep, Layla Gray, she's going to get pinned. What are we doing?
I mean, they had fun doing it. They looked like they were having a good time and really going out there to show off. It just...
My problem's not with the talent. My problem is with the booking.
I will say this may have actually been my match of the night because I thought this was actually a really solid trios match.
Yeah.
Part of the reason is because they didn't fall into the trope that we've seen of these multi-women matches where it's like, okay, wrestle for like the first minute and then it's just going to turn into like a spot fest of everyone coming in and everyone doing all this kind of stuff. It was an actual like six-woman tag match where we got to see them function like teams. There was storytelling in the like realm of tag team action that we got to see. We got to see some really good stuff by some of the, you know, more vets of the show. And then also from some of the newer folks. I too figured Gray was going to take the pin. I forgot that the three of them have actually tagged together and won their last time that they tagged together. So that bothers me less that she took the pin, knowing that they're basically puts them at 1-1. But I really enjoyed what I saw from a lot of the people in this, and I thought there was some really good work between the two of them. And while it was less than we've had from other Ring of Honor weeks of women's action, you know, we got 3 of the 10 matches that we had, which when you compare that to a lot of other promotions, it's actually pretty decent. But I mean, think
saying something, but still.
Yeah. But I think the biggest problem was that this show did feel overly stuffed with things that could have been trimmed down to have put more time into some of these other ones that were actually really good. So, yeah, I mean, I was surprised that they gave it the amount of, it felt like it was longer. And I looked, you know, I saw that it was 8 minutes. If this could have gone like 12 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, that would have been really awesome if we could have seen the match with Abaddon and Allison Kay be, you know, even like an 8 minute match would have been great. So I think if we would have got more depth from those things, that would have felt more substantial. But all in all, I thought this match actually was a really good match.
Differing opinions here. Mikey, you kind of got the tiebreaker here. How did you feel about it?
Man, why do I have to be the timer? Anyways, I am going to have to agree with Andrew on this one. This is also my match of the night in-ring wise, whereas my most entertainment came from JD Drake and Lee Johnson.
All right.
Surprisingly.
Mikey's playing that name.
This was my match of the night, and I think I also agree with Andrew in the sense where Ring of Honor could have gotten really lazy and just have everyone play like it's, you know, here comes the pain and everyone starts spamming their finishers at the very end of this match. I feel that even though I agree with Jesse that 8 minutes is kind of not a lot of time, especially because...
Not enough.
Well, no. I wish we got at least 10 minutes. My threshold is a 10-minute match is usually a good sweet spot because it's still kind of long, but it also doesn't feel very short. And it doesn't drag out like certain matches that go for 30, 40 minutes, especially when it's a lot of walking around. I'm looking at you, other companies. But anyways, I feel that in this 8 minutes, all six women had a chance to show what they're able to do, even if it was a short enough glimpse. I gotta say, my favorite person in this whole entire match would have to be Kiera. I think Kiera busts. What are you looking at me like that?
This is my shocked face, but still.
Again, I'm okay to admit I have biases, but no one is above critique. So take note of that, podcaster lands out there. If you do wrestling, you have your favorites, but you can't be biased as hell. We can't do that. I feel that every woman got a chance to shine. This was a great one. And I feel that as far as the flow goes, this was very well paced. I think every woman got a chance to shine. And from beginning to end, within that 8-minute span of time, we weaved some sort of story where it's like, hey, you six are going to wrestle. Go out there and do something. And they managed to have a good time and have something that was probably the most coherent from beginning to end than most other matches on the card tonight. So... I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I think it's embodied in the storytelling part of it with Taya holding Trisha Dora in the middle of the ropes and just like shoving her hand toward her corner and taking it back and doing and like basically manipulating her, showing how powerful she is. Like that is how the entire match went with everyone getting their stuff in. So very good to have that there. I know it wasn't the best and it should have been longer, but it was definitely worthwhile watching. Unlike the next promo we had from the Mama's Boys, where they're setting up that Griff had no idea he had a Proving Ground match tonight, even though it was actually... completely set up like earlier in the night. I mean, they're not giving Serpentico's mask back. They're barely cutting promos on this. And Maria, it just seems like they're out of sorts. Like as if they're all not, they haven't hung out in a while. I don't know what else it feels like to me.
Yeah. I was very confused as to why Griff Garrison was so surprised when at the top, like before we even started any matches, they announced that this match was happening. Like I saw this match was happening on social media. And I get that it's pre-recorded and all that stuff, but it's like, you know you're going to pre-record it and you're going to put it together. Like, build that into the scripts when you know where things are going to go.
Don't make it seem like we knew first.
Yeah. But, and they fixed my other problem with this later on in the night, but I was like, why is half of a tag team getting a singles title, you know, Proving Ground match instead of somebody else? Or... them getting a tag team Proving Ground match. Well, I mean, I know why they're not getting a tag team Proving Ground match because we got our one appearance by the tag team titles. So it was just weird. It felt weird in this promo as to why they were like, hey, Griff, you want to do something tonight? But yeah, can we finish the story with the Spanish Announce Project too, please? Like, let's finish this some way or another so we can at least move on from it, if not at least have a good finish to it.
Right, exactly. Or just have John Cruz admit that he's Serpentico. Either one. Is that how we all feel about that? Kind of just.
I got nothing to add.
Perfect, because I want to move on to my match of the night. I enjoyed this next match. Nick Camarado in his I'm so depressed Lou Ferrigno phase versus the Beast Mortos. And I have not seen the Beast Mortos be the faster one. What's up?
I now want Nick Camarado to come out to the hitchhike music from the Incredible Hulk TV show.
I don't know if they can afford that. Who knows?
That would be amazing.
Listen, if we can afford the Final Countdown, make it happen.
But yeah, I'm not used to the Beast Mortos being the non-power worker in the two. Like having him have trouble and have to use his agility and have some scary spots in this, but I really enjoyed watching this entire thing. I'm like, Nick, you found someone you can work with.
I love this match. This was fantastic. Again, yeah. Same complaint as I had with one of the ones earlier. It was just too short for me. I feel like we should have given them 10, 12 minutes. And I think because of this match, I figured out why they had Nick Camarado shave down like half of his bulk and hair is so that
so you could tell him apart.
The Beast Mortos could still be the hairy one.
Exactly. Yes. You're both right. You're both very right.
Yeah. The fact that the Beast Mortos looked small compared to Nick Camarado is insane how big Nick Camarado is.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude is so huge. And yeah, seeing Mortos get to do some of the lucha stuff that he does, that finishing dive was crazy for someone his size. Yeah, I did feel like I wanted some more from it. And I kind of wonder if we had Jacoby Watts out there playing into some of the psychology of Nick Camarado, we could have gotten some more depth. But yeah, the size of these two going at each other was pretty insane.
Listen, JBL knows my stance when it comes to Nick Camarado, so we're just going to leave that one there. But as far as the match goes,
you can guess what your stance is.
I mean, we'll talk off camera.
And where you tie your shoes.
Like, hi. Anyways, yeah, it was very interesting to see the Beast Mortos kind of be the smaller one in the situation. And, you know, I'm so happy that I get to see him do his Lucha Libre stuff, especially we forget that he comes from Triple A, so which is known for all the flippy dippy stuff. I thought this was a lot of fun. I do wish it got more time. And I'm very interested in the direction that we're headed with Nick, given what happens later in the show. He's just one pair of sunglasses away from, come on, brothers.
So what, the Righteous Part 2?
Well, okay. So I use video game logic here. So the palette swap. If the Righteous are akin to our main antagonist in Far Cry 5, depending on how levels of crazy we want Jacoby Watts to get, I could see him as on levels of antagonist with Far Cry 4 if we want to get very psychotic with it.
Yikes.
And we're going to have the Righteous versus the Upstanding.
There can only be one.
Well, it's the Righteous, honestly, versus the Pious.
Versus the Virtuous.
Honestly, Righteous give me like commune vibes, whereas Jacoby Watts gives me religious cult vibes. And I want there now to be a storyline because there can only be one in ROH.
When is Lance Archer moving over to the Virtuous?
I don't even want him there.
To close my thoughts on this match, I wish it went more. I had a good time watching it, and I'm excited to see the potential of where we go with the story next with what we got backstage a little bit later.
I can understand. Do you want to talk about wanting more from a match? We had a lot of that tonight, especially this next match, because honestly, you know, Lady Frost versus Marty Bell, Marty made Lady Frost work and like get through stuff. And I love that she didn't shut up. You know, mm-hmm. What I wrote down here, she's yelling out of the crowd, "Shut up, little kid." And there's like one kid in the front row. Like, she's wonderful, and I've known about her for a little bit on here, and again, having, you know, Allison Kay as well. They were both on the stuff tonight, but this was such a good match that needed a little bit more and should have had Marty have her own entrance at this point, playing to the crowd.
This was almost my match of the night. This is my first experience with Marty Bell. She's so good playing to the crowd. I absolutely love it. I know this was meant to be a squash match or an enhancements match, but it was really, really well done. I was very happy. Again, this was almost my match, and it's actually got the second highest rating for me tonight.
Wow.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this was probably one of my top two favorite matches, with the other one being the six-woman tag match. I felt like this was less of a squash or enhancement match. I felt like this was seeing Lady Frost being recognized as like an ROH staple, being recognized as someone who's got, like, she finally got moved out of the position of making other people who are heading up look good and gets a chance to actually come out victorious, wrestled against someone who didn't make it look like it was super easy. So I felt like this was a really like showcase match for Lady Frost. And it was interesting seeing some of the stuff that I saw from her match at Bloodsport that was very reminiscent of like some of the action there. So it's cool to see her constantly bringing in these things because she wrestles for so many different companies against so many different people and bringing in some of that style. So I was really happy to see Lady Frost have a really good match, which she usually does, but also be able to come out victorious in this. And I hope it's a sign that we're going to see more of her in Ring of Honor. And I say that because I want people to show up more in Ring of Honor. I don't want them to go to AEW. So I would love for her to be able to stay in Ring of Honor and like really make, you know, a footing there, especially now that we have two women's divisions.
He's in technical difficulties. Mikey is figuring out the fact because he turns his mic on and off. Here he comes.
There we go. I figured it out. I thoroughly enjoyed this match. Once again, shout out to both Allison and Marty, my girls of the Hex. I love them so much. I agree with what's been said. I don't really have anything else to add. This was also probably in my top two of the evening outside of the six women tag in terms of in-ring wrestling wise. Honestly, if another company's not going to sign the Hex, I would love ROH to keep Allison and Marty in the fold as much as possible, because there's a lot of possibilities that I would like to see from them. And they are so good on the independent scene. And as Andrew has stated, they go pretty much everywhere and anywhere that they can get booked on. I would love to see Marty and Allison both start making a more permanent home somewhere they feel comfortable with. So I thought this was fantastic.
Bring on the Hex versus the Renegades would be like, you know, the best thing ever.
To have a women's tag match?
There you go.
To see Charlotte. Come-
like I said, when, you know, our text messages, they needed to unify those trio six-man titles because there's not enough depth there. And they need to make a women's tag team title that the purpose is actually to go through Ring of Honor and AEW, so that way they have a vehicle to feature women in all of the promotions, because at least that way in every match you're using four different women and there's more story to it.
Yep. There's a reason for them to be there more than just they're amazing. Kind of like there was a reason to have Jacoby Watts appear during Nick Camarado's promo. He never got a word out talking about what's been going on and how the confidence isn't there, but he needs to believe in Jacoby Watts, and Nick will be all, and Nick doesn't seem like he's on board with this yet. I don't think from this he looks at all bought in yet. How do you feel about it?
He looked bored.
I feel like he's, and I think part of it is just how Nick is selling it, but also I fully believe that once Nick finally joins Jacoby Watts, he needs to become Nicholas Camarado. But I feel like he was trying to play that he's like torn. He's like, I'm not doing it on my own or whatever kind of a thing. Jacoby Watts is definitely he's got much more of the skills on the mics of the two of them. I'm just ready for them to progress to where this story is going to start really picking up with Camarado kind of joining with him. I think the two of them could be a super interesting tag. But I also think a more vicious Nick Camarado kind of being the, you know, dog on the leash for Jacoby Watts could also be super exciting and something to see.
No, I just pictured Nick Camarado as a chain chomp, so thanks for that visual.
I mean, he kind of is a human version of that.
I mean, you're not necessarily wrong.
I'd say more of the thwomp than the chain chomp, but that's just me.
It's like,
Er.
I am all here for Nick Comoroto and Jacoby Watts becoming a unit. My only thing that I'm kind of wanting from this, and come with me on this journey real quick.
Do I need a permission slip?
No, but if you are not necessarily a fan when it comes to religious organizations, now is the time to kind of skip ahead because I'm going to talk about that a little bit. But just follow me on here.
Okay.
Now, it is no secret that Jacoby Watts' character is obviously based on many, many of what I have deemed as TV evangelical-like type of preachers, priests, pastors, like very Joel Osteen vibes, if anyone knows what that is. Very charismatic, can pretty much sweet-talk anybody into doing anything and everything. What I'm waiting for, though, is that with those types of character archetypes, again, because I'm coming from a writing perspective, what would make the story work a little bit more is that Nick Comoroto, and usually people who fall victim to these types of character archetypes when it comes to these television preacher types, Nick has to be in some capacity, he needs to hit a rock bottom, whether that be he's constantly losing all the time or, you know, if they want to play on personal things, it's like, hey, remember you were part of a faction and now you're kind of just on your own because everyone's either being successful elsewhere or, you know, they got let go from the company and you're by yourself. I feel that Nick Comoroto hasn't hit that low point quite yet. And while I agree he can sell it a little bit better than what he has been presenting himself, we haven't found that reason for Nick to lose all hope in everything and for Jacoby to quote-unquote come save him and then willing to do everything that Jacoby says. Again, if we want Jacoby to be more of these television preacher types or even to take it a step further into some sort of cult leader as well, you have to get somebody who is at their lowest and offer them a ray of sunshine, a silver lining, a thread of hope, if you will. And I feel that we haven't gotten that with Nick and Jacoby quite yet, but there is enough there. And what I've seen so far, if booking and the story writers and if everybody behind the scenes doubles down and invests the time and effort into this, I think this has the potential to be a very interesting story to tell. Again, will they do it? At this point, who knows? Because ROH has a really bad habit of starting and stopping stories just because we can, for whatever reason. But I think that there is something here that the writer and the storyteller and me is just frothing at the mouth to see, because it's something we have rarely seen in other companies, where you can add some weird philosophical depth to the stories that you're telling. And we haven't seen that in quite some time, given a previous, you know, person who was very philosophical in his character development and character choices and things like that.
Just don't make him Deacon Batista, then I'll be happy.
I mean, you're not exactly wrong there, but again, thank you for coming with me on this journey. I know it doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but this is the lens that I view my professional wrestling. If you could give me good characters and good storylines, I'm going to follow you to the ends of the earth. But I'm also going to call you out on your lazy writing. Also, shout out to Lexi. Had the best facial expressions this whole entire time, and that Absolutely. Is why she's on the thumbnail of this video.
She was the MVP all the way through. Kind of like in Montreal, obviously, Evil Uno is the MVP as Dark Order came out to take on Zach Patterson and Frank Milano in a squash match. Weirdly, the two of them, though, Patterson and Milano are also Montreal-based wrestlers, so this was all probably stuff from Mystery Wrestling that they've been doing. That's why they kind of work together in that crazy style. I'm pretty sure I've seen these guys on Evil Uno's Fed.
I think so, too. Because I'm like, they look familiar.
Johnny Hungy, I have missed you.
I missed him so much. Me too. I was so excited to see him come out. I always get stunned by how short he is, but it just, I was so happy to see him.
The muscle hamster.
He's one of my favorites. Did you say muscle hamster?
Mm-hmm. He is the modern day Stretch Armstrong. I'm waiting for him to just, somebody to grab his arms and to stretch him to their limits. Exactly. All right, Andrew, tell us why we're
wrong. Look at that. Oh, disappointment.
Did you eat a lemon?
Are you sitting over Jesse's house right now?
This match was good enough.
I do like fun. Write it down, guys.
Why is this match?
You're not wrong.
Is there even still a Dark Order? They're like, oh, representing the Dark Order. And I feel like now it's basically just Evil Uno. And yeah.
Evil Uno, Johnny Hungy, and Alex Reynolds are the only thing that remain.
I don't even remember the last time I saw Alex Reynolds.
You haven't. I think he got released.
I think so.
So
correction, because you guys don't watch all the AEW products, he's still there. He was just on Rampage.
The third show of AEW.
And the most fun one, might I add.
I mean,
live a little, Andrew. Gosh.
Setting the bar low. So yeah, my problem is that I enjoy the Dark Order. I really loved the stuff they were doing when they were at their height. Do something with them. Bring them over to Ring of Honor and actually make the Dark Order again. Or just have Evil Uno do some stuff. John Silver, I really enjoy. He's super entertaining and everything like that. But I kind of feel like he's been stuck in the same place for too long. And I would just like to see more from it. I feel like this was another match that we didn't need. Like, I put this in the same vein as the first match of the night. It would have been fun if we had, you know, 6 matches or 7 matches, and this was one of those instead of 10 matches of them, you know, in this whole card. And this was the one that didn't really have a storyline in it. Because it just totally felt like they were like, oh, well, you know, your people that are really good, and Evil Uno and John Silver, we like you, people like you, so go out and have a match. Have fun, guys. And it just didn't really do anything for me in the grand scheme of things.
It's valid. It's a valid way to look at it in that respect. I can appreciate that. This was a hometown pop. This is half the reason they had it happen, and that's, I can understand why that's disappointing as we go into the way the show kind of moved itself along, including our next match, which is our main event, ostensibly, with Mark Briscoe taking on Griff Garrison in a Proving Ground match. We found out why Griff got the match in the first place. We found out a lot of other stuff about it. Briscoe actually defending, you know, part of the title thing on ROH is great. Let's see if that continues. But I don't know, was this a main event only because it was the champion? I mean, I don't know.
This should have been the opener. This should have been the first match of the night. I do appreciate that they gave us some context for why this match mattered at all. Not that I necessarily thought that information actually made me care more, because it felt like they made the match and then were like, how can we make this seem like it has a reason? Yeah. Holy crap. The men's world title is on Ring of Honor. And it was an all right match between the two of them. I guess the best thing out of this is Garrison doesn't lose anything because he's a tag team wrestler now. So losing in a singles match doesn't really take anything from him. And
with all the shenanigans and stuff too, which is hysterical.
And Briscoe appeared on Ring of Honor with the title, got a win. You know, it's his first, and not really title defense, but you know, at least he was there with some tie into the title. But yeah, the most interesting thing was that we had a Proving Ground match. We've had now 2 Proving Ground matches that have not a local talent wrestling against the champion.
Right. And established in certain, in a storyline somewhere else, like actually being featured. That's humongous.
But other than that, this match, I mean, it just, honestly, by the time we got to this point in the night, I didn't even score this match. I just already knew what I was going to give the overall total score for this whole day of wrestling.
I mean, I was gassed by the end of this as well, but I actually really liked this match. And I think it's a recency bias on my part because of the fact that I'm so happy to have the belt being present on the program. So that definitely weighs into some of the scoring I had on this one. But overall, I didn't think it was a bad match.
I did love the commentary brought up multiple times that Briscoe has a history with Maria. where, you know, Ed the Briscoes fought the Kingdom and all that stuff, and she's been like a thorn in his side for a long time. So it was good to see that tied in, not just for Garrison, but for everybody involved. Uh-oh. Oh, no.
I'm trying to find the words to articulate how I truly feel about this match, because on the one hand, I feel like I fall in the middle, where I agree to a certain extent with what Andrew said, but I also kind of understand where Jesse's coming from, and I agree with his points, too. I think the best way to kind of describe how I feel about this match is the fact that I knew what we were getting into with this Proving Ground match, because let's be honest, we've only really had one Proving Ground match that led to an actual championship match, even if it was shoehorned in when we got Infantry outlasting the Undisputed Kingdom to get their shot at Supercard of Honor. So I knew Griff wasn't going to win this one. However, I think that with the last two champions we've had for the ROH men's title, I like seeing Briscoe kind of be that face for ROH, especially given the fact of the history that he has with ROH before it got bought out in this new iteration that we're seeing it with. So I think I'm just going to fall in the middle with this one. I agree with parts of what Andrew said and parts of what Jesse said, but where my own opinion comes from, I think that even though I knew what I was getting into, I do appreciate the fact that this was a chance for Griff to work with Briscoe and to kind of try to hold his own. And even though Griff didn't win the Proving Ground match, I kind of view it in the same way when Griff went up against Copeland in the open challenges for the TNT championships, where you have the veteran who's been in this business for 20 plus years working with more up and comers. I wish this was done more often, but knowing Mark Briscoe outside too and wanting to work with younger guys as well, I'm hoping that this becomes a consistent thing. Maybe not every week, but every other week Briscoe is on here doing something, because
he seems to have an affinity for ROH in that respect, because it's his home and he's doing that. So I think you're right, Mikey. I think he's gonna do his best to be there as often as possible.
And not hopefully. To say that Eddie didn't care about the title, but because of that history and the affinity that Briscoe has with ROH, I feel that it come across more as genuine than Eddie when he had the title. I mean, Eddie was, look, the bar is very low when we had Claudio as our champion. Like, that bar was very low. And so it's not that hard to kind of be above it. But it's refreshing to see someone who genuinely actually has that history with ROH and cares about the history and what ROH means to a lot of wrestlers and wrestling fans too, that I'm willing to give it a chance. Obviously, I want to see Briscoe in action more on ROH since he is our champion. But I am going to be cautiously optimistic, because the champion is someone who cares about where ROH goes. And I hope that becomes Briscoe's running theme for however long his championship reign is going to be.
And we care about ROH as well. That's why we're going to come to the end here and quickly give our empanada scale ratings for this. We've kind of gone over pretty much everything that we've in every match so far, so we can keep this pretty brief. What was your rating? And quickly, just a little overview of what you had the show going with Andrew, Jesse, Mikey, and then myself. Go ahead, Andrew.
I gave it a 6. I felt it was a bit bloated, yet underdeveloped. It wasn't quite a dead body left out in the sun bloated. It was more a poor night of planned. It was a poor night of planned eating on Thanksgiving.
Ooh, so yes. Yeah.
Huh. When you wore jeans.
It's a ruptured appendix. Jesse?
I gave this a 5.5. To me, this was adequate, but I crave brilliance, not mediocrity. I'm begging you, please show me the extraordinary that waits behind the shadows of this normality. Please.
I.e. Robin Renegade.
Exactly. Please. And Charlotte, maybe. Mikey?
I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10 for me for Ring of Honor. I agree that there was a lot of underdeveloped storylines and just thrown together matches for the sake of it. But there is a lot of potential with a lot of these matches that I saw. And even though we chastise like the the way that we're handling premier athletes. I am not beyond things, you know, being redeemed. And if they are utilized more correctly, they still have the potential to be fun. I just feel that we took things out of order with this. And like I previously stated, I think the biggest hidden gem right now, if we utilize it properly, is whatever's happening with Camarado and Jacoby Watts. I honestly believe there's something there, and I'm hoping that ROH capitalizes it. So whereas I want more storytelling from, you know, our more established stars that we have on the roster, I still had a good time with this, and I like continuing to support all the talent that we watch is basically where I'm coming from. So 7 out of 10 for me. I had a good time watching it, and it was refreshing because it reminded me that even though we have discourse, professional wrestling is the one constant thing that I'm always enjoying with. And so I had a good time watching this. So 7 out of 10 for me.
I enjoy also, Andrew, shaking your microphone there. I understand what you were trying to do, but that was hysterical. Just seeing it bobbing up every once in a while. I gave it a 6. It's you know, a standard kind of, you know, ROH at that point after a pay-per-view where they just are getting themselves back in order. And now with a new champion, they're just feeling themselves out. So a 6 is always good. Gentlemen, put your hands in. Thank you for doing this review of Honor. We have really appreciated having you all here. Thank you, Mikey. Thank you, Jesse. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you to you for joining us this evening, either if you've been here for a while or if you've just joined the Cult of Dagon and are learning to worship under the sea. We really appreciate that as well. Remember to, you know, subscribe and get those notifications out there. Join us as much as you can because we want to share this with you, especially ROH, because we're all Biconic here. You, us, everybody. We're Biconic. We love you, and we'll see you in the next video.
Yes, the Cthulhu.
And all you see is Mikey, like, rubbing his shoulders as he's walking out, going, "Yes, Nick, it's fine."
Thank you so much for tuning in to another Vibe Tribe production. What's going to happen next time? Well, you're going to have to tune in to find out. But until then, remember, take care of yourself, love one another, and as always, make sure that you keep the good times rolling. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you next time.